Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours. From the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands, out west eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south all the way into South America, north to the pole, and of course, on the internet, worldwide. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Great to be with you. Well, we'll kind of roll through the news in the first hour and see what's worth talking about. In the second hour, we will have Dr. Nick Begich here. Dr. Nick Begich of Angels Don't Play That Hard. And so we'll get an update on the Heart Project and a lot more tonight from Dr. Begich. There's not a whole lot of news, at least in the... As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting the way the traditional wire service right now is reporting. They're really not reporting. I see here that Helmut Kohl has resigned as honorary chairman of the Christian Democratic Union, brought down by a campaign financing scandal that now marks the stunning unraveling of one of Europe's most respected statesmen, the man who reunited Germany, Clay Feet. The average American is wealthier because of the rise in the stock market, which is just seems to have no end. Maybe Alan Greenspan should be cloned. Maybe he should be the first person cloned. We need another Alan Greenspan. And, you know, he's really beginning to get on up there a little bit. What are we going to do without him? He has maintained the longest U.S. economic boom in the world's history. So how can we live without Alan Greenspan? We can't. We've got to have him. Clone him. Do it now. Let's see, what else? Now, remember we were going to launch, there was a big protest about a Vandenberg launch. They were going to launch a missile from Vandenberg and then from Kwajalein Island in the Pacific. They were going to try to shoot it down. You know, another missile. And an anti-ballistic missile system, well, they tried and they missed. In an apparent setback on the Pentagon's drive to develop a national missile defense, a prototype missile interceptor streaked into space Tuesday night in search of a mock warhead launched from an Air Force base in California, but failed to hit the target. So, in other words, had there been a warhead on the thing going to Kwajalein, there would now not be a Kwajalein. It would have missed. And that tells you what kind of protection we as a nation have, this is what the big news ought to be, against some idiot's missiles. The North Korean missiles. The ones that Iran is putting together. And yes, they are looking at a missile now, development of a missile that will get to the U.S. East Coast. Did you know about that? The weather. No, I'm not just harping on it. Did you know? Did you have any idea that Sunday a windstorm came sweeping into the Pacific Northwest and killed two people in Washington State, left hundreds of thousands of customers without power? If you're in the Northwest listening to me, I'm not giving you news. You've been out of power. Even in San Jose, there were partial outages. But in the Northwest, hundreds of thousands of people were without power after a windstorm. You're not going to believe this. Produced in some areas winds of 115 miles an hour. Now, let me read this. The Weather Service reported sustained winds of 25 to 35 miles an hour in most all areas. The highest gusts reported by the National Weather Service were 115 miles per hour at mid-morning at Cannon Beach, Oregon. Gusts of 81 miles an hour at Netterts, Oregon, is it? N-E-T-A-R-T-S, Oregon. Knocked a house 12 feet off its foundation. Now, think about that for a second. It picked up a house and moved it 12 feet. Now, that's really serious wind. That's a serious storm. Very serious. And just about every storm that I read about lately has winds in excess of 100 miles an hour. Now, I admit that I am somewhat of a neophyte when it comes to weather. I am not a forecaster, nor am I a climatologist or a meteorologist, as we all so well know. But I'm also not an idiot. And anybody looking at what's going on with the weather right now doesn't need a climatologist or a meteorologist to know that something is really skewed up. A lot of really weird things going on in the weather. If you're in the Northwest and you got hit by this, it wasn't just weird, it was tragic. Going to cost a lot of money. That was Sunday. The Associated Press, January 12th, now notes the storms that hit France last month, which killed 90 people, also with winds in excess of 100 miles an hour, caused, get this, folks, $3 billion in damage. The cost of fixing the electrical service alone, $2.7 billion, and destroyed at least 741,000 acres of forest. Huh. Finally getting cold there in the Northeast. Really cold all of a sudden. And how's this? You tell me how this could happen, because I would like to know. A team of scientists hope that chemical analysis will reveal this week why at least 15 blocks of ice. Notice I'm not saying hail. I'm saying blocks of ice, some as big as basketballs. You think about that for a second. A block of ice as big as a basketball. What would that weigh? Anyway, they've plummeted from Spanish skies in the past 10 days. The most surprised person of all by this phenomenon is me, according to geologist Jesus Martinez Freireas, who is heading a team of Spanish scientists that traveled all over that country, collecting and analyzing the blocks of ice, which weigh as much as, here it is, 8 pounds. 8 pounds. Now, let's think about that a little bit, shall we? 8 pounds of ice falling from the sky, obviously attaining terminal velocity. A chunk of ice weighing 8 pounds. Now, if that were to hit right, it wouldn't kill one person. It would kill, it'd be like a bomb. That's like a cannon shell. Or something. Like a cannon shell or something. I can't even visualize that in my mind, but it is a true story. By the way, for those of you saying that you think the 8-pound blocks, 8-pound blocks of ice falling out of the air, would be, you know, from airplanes, waste facilities, or something wrong. The initial analysis of the ice, as big as basketballs, is that it's made out of water. So, you can forget the airplane idea. This didn't come out of an airplane. And one more thing. It was said that basketball size ice, and I'm not saying hail because there's no way, there's no way, of plummeting through the atmosphere should have been registered on radar screens. In other words, that's big enough to show up on a radar screen. And then there is this story, and then I'll go to the phones, but I wanted you to hear this. This is the kind of stuff you're just not hearing elsewhere. And this, too, comes from my source inside, my secret information source, inside KNBC in Los Angeles. Bless that person's heart. But it also aired on the Associated Press. Residents in Riverfront knew something was wrong when carp, you know the fish carp, right? We've got them in Lake Mead. People go and feed them. When carp leaping 7 feet out of the water, began to leap out of the water and thrashed about on shore, before long, of course, dead carp and minnows were piling up on the banks. Now listen to me. This is in Anderson, Indiana. Hundreds of thousands of fish, hundreds of thousands of fish, have collected along a 50-mile stretch of the White River since the water was poisoned about 5 weeks ago by what the investigators suspect was an industrial polishing agent used at an auto parts plant. Josh McDermott, who lives near the river, simply said, quote, "It's like someone dropped a nuclear bomb." He'd never seen anything like it. The fish were jumping that high into the air to get out of the water. It was so poisoned that the fish didn't care about the fact that they could not breathe. What was in the water was so horrible that it apparently made death by atmosphere preferable. It's the equivalent to us getting so upset that we jump into the water at a depth where we can't breathe and just inhale water and die. Kind of like our doing that. We have a fish actually jumping out of the water because whatever it is in there is so horrible that they can't face it. Pretty weird story, huh? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello? Going once, going twice, gone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Art. It's Learchad Tim from Cold Lake, Alberta, Canada.
Yes.
Hey, man. Tonight on the national news up here in Canada, in the Northwest Territories,
yes,
something came smoking through the atmosphere and left...
Big time.
Big time, big... Yeah, it was on...
Actually, you know what? I've got a story here that says that what you're talking about right now... Well, here it is. At 8:46 a.m., in a clear, darkened sky, a, quote, Titanic-sized meteorite lit up the southern Northwest Territories, Yukon Territory, and southeastern Alaska. This extremely bright object was seen by thousands of people. It was pulsing red, blue, and green colors and left a distinct contrail across the expansive northern sky. Some people even heard a sonic boom. That's a big mother.
Yeah, that's they had the actual the blue exhaust trail.
Yeah.
They had the blue smoke trail.
Not necessarily. Now, let us not jump to conclusions. Something gigantic reentered. Now, they say meteorite here, but I have a problem with that. I've always had a problem with it. It may have been a meteorite.
Or a Chinese missile test. Or...
But until they find the meteorite, this is just so much spin. It's a presumption. It's, you know.
Yeah, it must have been a sight to see because, you know, the winter up there, they're in dark, you know, a little bit further north. So
oh, yes.
It must have been contrasted against the sky like unbelievable.
Sure, anyway. Sure. I'm glad you called, and I have the story right here.
Minus 32 degrees right now and falling.
minus 32.
Yeah, it's chilly up here.
Where did you say you are?
Cold Lake. It's an Air Force base. It's Canada's premier fighter base for Hornets. And we host the Maple Flag, the big NATO exercise, every year for 2 months, May and June.
Now, basically, that's party weather.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting tired of partying, you know. And it's the end of January. Looking forward to spring this year.
Yeah, I know. I know. It gets you after a while. I've been there. Thank you.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Take care. Yeah, that was in Anchorage. And I suspect it's still the case, so it would be fun for, you know, to hear from somebody in Anchorage or even Fairbanks. That would be better. When it really got that cold, nobody in their right mind, you know, goes outside for any reason when you don't have to. So, I mean, you are stuck inside, and they have cabin fever up there, and it drives a lot of people crazy. And so, as a result, the way to handle it in Anchorage, my recollection is, you partied all the time. My God, there were a lot of parties. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Bell. This is Robert in San Joaquin Valley, California.
Sir. Yes, sir.
We finally got some rain over here.
Yeah, I know. It's been drizzling here. We've had four straight days of solid cloud cover here in the desert.
Well, the air feels good over here right now. We sure appreciate it. I watched you and Whitley Strieber on the Today Show.
Yes, with Matt Lauer.
Yes, and I enjoyed seeing you. You both look very nice. And if I'm not being too personal, that gold chain that you were wearing, what is that on the chain that's hanging down from?
No, you're not being too personal at all. That is an Egyptian cartouche.
Oh.
And it has my sign, my name, actually, in Egyptian, along with the sign of life.
I see. Can I ask you something about your guest, Nick Begich?
You can, yes.
I read his book, and there's a gentleman he mentions in his book, a scientist, Dr. Patrick Flanagan.
Yes.
I know Nick is a good friend of the doctor. I know the doctor also. And he has been, his name has been submitted for a Pulitzer Prize in science, and you might want to ask him about that.
With respect to what project?
To a major breakthrough with health.
And, all right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll ask him about it. Thank you.
All right.
Take care. All right. Bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
We've been traveling far. Without a home. Not without a star. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Somebody sent me the following list of children's books that didn't quite make it. That's children's books that didn't quite make it. Their titles. Here we go. You Are Different, and That's Bad. The Boy Who Died from Eating All His Vegetables. Boy Who Died from Eating All His Vegetables. The Kid's Guide to Hitchhiking. Curious George and the High Voltage Fence. The Little Sissy Who Snitched. Some Kittens Can Fly. That's awful. The Pop-Up Book of Human Anatomy. Strangers Have the Best Candy. Whining, Kicking, and Crying to Get Your Way. You Were an Accident. Things That Rich Kids Have, But You Never Will. Your Nightmares Are Real. Eggs, Toilet Paper, and Your School. Why Can't Mr. Fork and Miss Electrical Outlet Be Friends? Places Where Mommy and Daddy Hide Neat Things, and this last one I can't read you. I won't read you. that's funny. Funny, funny, funny. Why Can't Mr. Fork and Miss Electrical Outlet Be Friends? Books That Never Made It. We'll be right back. Open lines through the top of this hour, and then Nick Begich. Been a long time since we've heard from Nick. So we had the missile test in Kwajalein. The missile roared off the launch pad, trying to intercept this thing coming at it from Vandenberg, and missed. Which means we don't have any way to stop yet incoming ballistic missiles. With that in mind, listen to this. National security officials are increasingly worried that Iran, with help from Russia, may be closer to than previously believed to producing nuclear weapons. Among the chief concerns, said administration officials in this Associated Press story, is the continued flow of technology to Tehran, primarily from, of course, Russia. U.S. officials reacted with alarm to reports over the weekend that Iran may order an additional 3 nuclear reactors from Russia. Russian engineers, if you're curious, are already building 1 reactor at a site in southern Iran under an existing contract. Both Moscow and Tehran insist these reactors, they say, are only intended for power generation, and there has been no diversion to weapons programs. Would everybody who believes that hold their hand up, please? That's what I thought. That's like it's not Y2K related. Yes, it did occur on the 31st or the 1st, but it is not Y2K related. I didn't see one failure, other than the Pentagon, that actually admitted they had a Y2K failure. Now, massively, things did fail, and they still are failing, but the tagline for every newscast is, however, officials of fill-in-the-blank, the company, the government, the agency, say it was not Y2K related. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good, good. I was up at the New York book signing.
Oh, you were?
Yes, I was.
We're trying to get additional pictures up now.
Well, I'm the fellow that sent them up there.
Well, bless your ever-loving heart.
I've got hundreds of them.
Well, I was joking the other day, and I'm sure you heard me. I said I gave my cameras, both of them, 35 millimeter and the digital, to the book people
right.
Who were there. And they proceeded to use every last frame, every last digital possibility, taking pictures of me at the table.
Right.
So I really appreciate what you have done.
Oh, no problem.
We're sorting through them now, and they're going to be up shortly.
Good.
All right?
Well, I'll just keep posting or sending some more up to Keith, and you can use them as you see fit.
I heartily appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
All right, take care. Yeah, it was amazing. Oh, this one's good. You're going to like this one. Just how easy is it to steal credit card numbers on the Internet? On Thursday, MSNBC was able to view about 2,500 credit card numbers stored by seven small e-commerce websites within a few minutes using elementary instructions provided by a source. That's all it will say is a source. In all cases, a list of customers and all their personal information was connected by the Internet and either was not password protected or the password was viewable directly from the website. Good Lord. That's really frightening. These are on supposedly secure servers. Well, we got a lot of work to do. We've really got a lot of work to do. On the international line, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Is Attorney Belson?
Yes, of course. Turn your radio off, please.
Sure, I did.
Good.
Am I speaking to Art?
Give me your best guess.
You know, I keep hearing this, and people say, is this the pizza guy and all this? No. It has to be you. I can't believe I made it.
So, in other words, you believe it's Art Bell?
Absolutely. I'm freaked out.
That's your final answer.
I'm trying not to have a heart attack.
All right. Anyway, where are you?
I'm in Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. Yeah, I guess it is winter now, finally.
It's quite brutal, and I have to say right off, I love your show. It's kept me up a lot.
It's done that to me, too.
Forgive me for my nervousness. I have fibromyalgia as a result. I actually tried to call in one time. You had mentioned a story about a really sickening thing about a baby who had been burned in a microwave. And
oh, yes.
I had a treatment on my prostate where they inserted a microwave catheter, and it was botched, and I got burnt internally there.
Oh,
and,
man. That's a horrible story.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what it's like down there. I know that the States is pretty litigious. I was knocked into poverty after graduating as an award-winning advertising student.
Are you saying that after they did this, you had no recourse
I had a crappy legal aid lawyer, and I have not been able to get any recourse since. I haven't even been able to get treatment.
Well,
period.
Well,
I was sent to the Mayo Clinic and shut out of treatment because this doctor who did it was Canada's top urologist and knew the expatriates who worked there when I was sent there.
Well, that certainly all sucks.
Yeah, it does. I guess what's kept me alive, I guess, is the times we're in, and for a long time it was my cat. But I want to say a few things really quickly because
your cat kept you alive.
Well, I had this gorgeous, intelligent cat that was named Bleep. I can't believe I'm telling you this.
No, I understand that. Cats can be really good friends, and it can be a reason for you wanting to stick around, you know, when you otherwise might not want to.
Yeah, and, he last year I was robbed of everything I owned, and then he died, and...
Brother.
Yeah, I've been really fighting. So I guess I want to make a couple of quick comments, and if I may, just ask your viewers to... Listeners to pray or send good vibes to me. I'll just say my first name, if I can do that.
Sure.
It's Paul. I wanted to say something. I'm a little bit confused. I saw a picture, like I don't have the internet, of you on the internet, and you remind me of my Uncle Charlie. You look kind of jovial, and you've got kind of, you know, long hair. And I saw a picture of you in the book, which suddenly escaped my brain, your new book.
The Coming Global Superstorm,
right.
Yes.
Right, and very accurate stuff, incredibly interesting. But the picture of you in your book, compared to the one I saw on the internet, it's like two different people.
Well, when did you... I mean, I have no way of knowing what you saw on the internet. I mean, there are pictures on the internet of me.
It was New Year's Day.
But you're not listening. There are pictures up there that go back to when I was 12 years old.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There are pictures of me in the 60s when I did have long hair.
Okay.
There are all kinds of pictures of me up there. There are more pictures of me up there than Carter has little liver pills. So I don't know what you saw, huh?
I'm just really impressed with your show, and I might say that there are a lot of Christians who are open to what you're saying, and who believe that there is a possibility of other life out there.
Of course there is. Why would anybody doubt that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you hit a golf ball off the moon and it went through everything it could and it just kept going, it would prove eternity exists. And by that factor, if eternity exists, then anything is possible. And I absolutely believe there has to be
Let me think about that one, and thank you. Let's see, if you hit a golf ball off the moon and it just kept going, that would prove eternity exists. It's an interesting statement, isn't it? Maybe he's right. If the golf ball kept on going forever, if it escaped the gravity of the moon, I suppose you'd have to yell an interstellar four or something. But if it just kept on going, then it would prove eternity exists. I'm going to remember that one and chew it over a little bit. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I'm James calling from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Hello, James.
How are you? I got through to you on Friday. Spoke to you about, was that the show in New York City?
Yes.
I was going to send you some photos. No, it was interesting, that guy just got through a second ago. There are people there from Wisconsin to see you. Like, I'm only 3 hours away, but this guy was, like, flew in just to see you on
there. There are people who flew from as far as Seattle. Can you imagine that?
No, yeah, hey. We never get a chance, do we?
Well.
Gosh. And it rang once, and now I forgot what I was going to tell you about.
See, that's nerves.
Sorry?
That's nerves. You're all nervous, and so you're forgetting what you wanted to say.
The thing is, like, every time I get on, I get a few questions out.
Well, the way to do it, the way I was taught to do it is, you know, to kill your nervousness.
What's that?
Just picture, like, all that audience out there, naked as jaybirds, with all their private parts hanging out.
That's right, the whole underwear thing.
Yeah, right? And so if they're all like that,
yes.
What's to be nervous about?
But the main thing, actually, I did have in mind.
Yes.
Was the fellow with the contrails from Canada.
William Thomas.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. You going to have him on again soon, or?
Well, of course, I've just really recently had him on. As soon as there's any new lab result, as soon as they go up to altitude and get a sample, and we know more, then I'm going to have him right back on again. Yeah, hell yes.
Okay, because where I live is a lot of industries here and whatnot. We actually, Worcester is famous for all kinds of things, like we invented the birth control pill.
That is where they make Worcestershire sauce, is it?
No, that's English.
Too bad.
From England, yeah. They have an American version, but...
But it's not made there.
Hardly a substitute, yeah.
How do you like living in Worcester? I mean, like right now. How cold is it outside?
Well, when you're showing it yesterday, it was 5 below.
And the wind chill?
Oh, gosh, 30 or so more, I think.
About 30 below?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's right now outside, maybe 10 degrees.
Sorry.
But, like the metals came here that made the Patriot missile?
Yes.
We've got a lot of stuff here, and we've seen a lot of conch shells. Like, I was on the freeway.
They're all across the country, sir.
Yes.
That's all there is to it. They're all across the country, everywhere.
And
there's no question about the fact that they ain't what they used to be. I mean, millions of people are noticing. So the only question is not whether something is going on, but exactly, you know, what is going on. That's the only question we have left. As far as I'm concerned, not whether it's going on, but what it is. What is it?
A very old friend came by today.
There's something about the instrumental behind this that I really love.
Though I smiled and tears inside were burning, I wished him luck and then he said goodbye. He was gone, but still his words kept returning. Where was there for me to do cry?
If you'll stay right where you are. Nick Begich is coming next.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired January 18th, 2000.
Coming up here in a moment is Dr. Nick Begich, who rang the original alarm bells about HAARP. That's right, HAARP, up in Alaska. The Alaskan HAARP that angels don't play. Wrote a book about it. Haven't heard from the doctor in a long time, so it's going to be good to have him here tonight. He's going to update us on HAARP and a lot more. He's got a brand new book out. It's the latest, called Earth Rising. We'll tell you more about Dr. Nick Begich and dive into what's coming in a moment. I like that commercial. Aside from the fact that it mentions my book, it also mentions you're waiting to see a loan officer and you're reading a book about how to get what you really want. Well, let's see. What would that really be? A loan that you don't have to repay? I don't know. Just getting a loan, I guess, is what they're talking about. All right. Dr. Begich burst upon the American consciousness some years ago now with respect to his work on HAARP. Dr. Begich is the eldest son of the late United States Congressman from Alaska, Nick Begich Sr., He's a political activist and political, I guess I had to read this right, and political activist Peggy Begich. He is well known in Alaska for his own political activities, twice elected president of both the Alaska Federation of Teachers and the Anchorage Council of Education. He's been pursuing independent research in the sciences and politics for most of his adult life. He received his doctorate in traditional medicine from the Open International University for Complementary Medicines in November of 1994. He co-authored the book you know about, Angels Don't Play This Harp, Advances in Tesla Technology, and he's just written all kinds of things. His latest book is Earth Rising, the one I'm holding in my hand, The Revolution Toward a Thousand Years of Peace. That co-authored with James Broderick. So that's a brand new baby book, born in December of 99. Here from Anchorage, Alaska, is Dr. Nick Begich. Hi, Nick.
Hi, it's good to be with you again.
Oh, great to have you. Nick, one of the things that you suggested an ultimate use of HAARP might be could conceivably be weather modification. And since you and I have last spoken, there have been two things that popped to mind that I have to ask you about, aside from getting a general update on HAARP. One, we have had this continuing onslaught of reports of chemtrails, contrails that are not really contrails, seem to have other things in them. That's one. Two, we have had weather conditions that are unprecedented. 100-mile-per-hour winds taking down a third of the trees in France, 150-mile-an-hour winds in the Northwest the other day. I could go on and on and on. The weather has gone completely bonkers. Now, having said that, do you think that a HAARP could have any effect on any of this, or be affecting it, or causing it, or whatever?
You know, it very well could be. You know, the situation with HAARP is it has expanded and continued to operate, you know, since we first reported on it. In fact, this summer they finally got 48 elements in the array actually operating and fully energized, and they ran campaigns in September and October of last year. And what they were in the ranges they were evaluating were the generation of ULF, ELF, and VLF signals, and they were also making observations for ionospheric emissions in the what is the 230 nanometer range. Which
can you give the neophyte out there who says, huh, HAARP? Can you give them a real quick 101? What is HAARP?
HAARP is it's an array of antennas on the ground, and it generates radio frequency energy. And unlike most radio frequency energy that dissipates or spreads out very rapidly from its source, this energy is concentrated in using a way of firing this configuration of antennas. So the energy is concentrated to a relatively small area, and when it is so concentrated, you get an effective radiated power of up to 1 billion watts when this device is fully operational. And what it actually does is manipulate an area above the Earth that begins about 30 miles above the Earth called the ionosphere. And by manipulating it in various ways, they can create a number of effects. One of those is weather modification. One of those is over-the-horizon radar, the ability to look around the curvature of the Earth for incoming objects. It can detect, using that technology, anything from intercontinental ballistics missiles all the way down to cruise missiles. So it's very effective technology. It can also be used to determine which ones of those missiles might be carrying nuclear payloads, and can be used for creating what's called an EMP, or an electromagnetic pulse, a surge of energy so strong that it knocks out electronic circuits on anything in its path.
Wow.
The device is pretty versatile, but you know, as a technology,
now I should explain to people that normally radio transmissions, like the one you're listening to right now, for example, will leave an antenna, and for example, in the case of AM radio, go to the ionosphere at night, which is thick enough to reflect that signal back to Earth, and that's how you can hear stations at a long distance. But
bear in mind what Dr. Begich just said. That is, it begins on Earth and spreads out and becomes very wide. What HARP is doing is a scientific experiment to do the exact opposite. In other words, they start out with a very broad a signal at on the ground, and they have these acres of antennas, and then they concentrate it to be a very narrow, very small spot of energy, extremely high energy, smashing the ionosphere for whatever reason, and that's what they're doing. So people really, really need to understand, you know, they talk about power levels and say, well, it's nothing compared to what Mother Nature is doing right now with our sun, for example. And indeed, we're having sun flare after flare after flare to the point where the lower frequencies are just no good and haven't been for about a week now. We're having so many flares.
You know, when you look at this energy, it's not just that you're concentrating it, but it's coherent energy. In other words, you're able to modulate it or vibrate it at very specific frequencies. And
yes,
certain frequencies trigger certain events or act as what would be equated to like a primer on a bullet. It causes a release of other energy that's in place at the location in which you're sending this energy up. So the ionosphere, which has tremendous energy potentials within it, this device on the ground, although small, the coherent energy, the control of that energy, is how they generate the various effects by manipulating the energy that's naturally in place. So it becomes actually an extension of the machine on the ground, but with tremendous energy potentials.
Well, you and I both know that what they've said about HARP is that, oh, come on, we're not doing all of that. What we're actually doing is simply studying the ionosphere. We're, I think they said something about trying to detect underground bunkers and tunnels. And that was about it. They didn't really say more than that, did they?
Well, they did, actually. When you look at the documents that we amassed for our first work, it was compelling. Everything from ground-penetrating tomography, over-the-horizon radar, each of these various applications, including transmission of energy from one place to another. A number of applications actually showed up in an early 1990 HARP document that we quoted extensively from in our first book. But since the publication of that work, we've really continued to pursue the story, at least in conjunction with a lot of other things. But in that context, we found one document that was quite interesting. In fact, it's called Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025.
Yep.
And with context of that, one of the things that they talk about is ionospheric modification. And they talk about it in the context of a system called AIM, which is an artificial ionospheric mirror. This is just another way of sending electromagnetic energy into the ionosphere. And one of these is situated at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. It's being used in conjunction with this program. But one of the people that did some of the work on this is a guy named Paul E. Cozy, who's attached to the HARP project and also was a consultant to NATO France on ionospheric modification for weapons applications.
May I ask one question? Why,
sure.
Why do you think they're putting these in Alaska? What is the advantage to Alaska?
There's several, actually. When you look at, first of all, if you look at Alaska in terms of this particular technology, you need large amounts of raw energy, and the ideal source of energy is natural gas. Natural gas in Alaska, the company that began the HARP project actually was an oil and gas company, ARCO. And ARCO has had at that time about 4 trillion cubic feet of natural gas that they were looking for a market for. And
so what, large amounts of cheap and plentiful energy.
That's number one, because that can convert through what are called magnetohydrodynamic generators, which are relatively compact and generate tremendous energy potentials and are very, very portable. So that would be the ideal energy source. Coupling that with the location, when you look at the planet, if you remember from most people remember from school the bar magnet experiment where you threw a little filings of metal and the form of it was you had this sort of arc that went from the South Pole to the North Pole. And this is the same model that the Earth has. In other words, you have the natural magnetic field lines that start at the South Pole and run to the North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
And where you get closest to the poles is the best place to intersect these energy lines. And for certain applications of the HARP technology, you need to utilize those magnetic lines of force. So the closer you are, the less energy it takes to push energy in, so the less distance you have to cover. So
Alaska
has all of those attributes. Plus, as a strategic location, today we heard the story on the interceptor test on the
that failed.
And it failed. But what we had said 5 years ago when we first started was that HARP technology would be used in conjunction with an intercontinental ballistics missile defense system, even though there was a treaty in place that would forbid it. And our position was that HARP was being used to begin the advances in that technology so it eventually could be deployed. Now, what most people don't know is in the interim years, what has happened is the federal government has funded Star Wars again, this time primarily as a ground-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And where this shows up, for instance, in the 1997 budget, it was actually as high as it was during the highest years of the Reagan administration when Star Wars was initiated. And they have an additional $6.6 billion allocated for strategic defense in this area. And Alaska, when you look at it on the globe, it is the only location where you can cover all 50 states with an anti-missile system. And so it's likely it'll be deployed here. They've had a number of hearings in the last 2 years about citing it here, and it pretty much from all press reports, the system is coming.
Out of curiosity, Nick, if it were used as an anti-ballistic missile system, how would they concentrate enough energy in a small enough area coming back off the ionosphere to destroy a missile?
Well, there's a couple of things that, you know, in terms of how could they use HARP. At its present state, the power isn't sufficient to do as much as I think it will do as they ramp it up. But basically the concept is, first of all, on the detection side, you need an accurate, efficient system that can detect anything coming in from very, very high levels to sea levels.
Right.
The old over-the-horizon technology couldn't do that. As things came closer in, they became distorted, and you couldn't get the low elevation. So this technology solves that problem. The other thing that this technology does is it provides a strong enough energy source at present so that each of those incoming objects creates has a unique energy signature. And what happens is with gamma ray detectors that are satellite based, you can actually look at those incoming objects and determine which ones are carrying a nuclear payload. So
right.
The second thing you do is you narrow your targets. How many are you going after?
Right.
And then the third phase of that, which requires a substantially larger amount of energy, would actually create an EMP that would knock out the electronics. An EMP is this electromagnetic pulse.
Theoretically, Nick, how large an area would that electromagnetic pulse on the other end be?
It would be wide using HARP as it's configured. However, what we found under the Department of Energy, in fact, we cited in our new book, is a new technology. And this particular technology, Department of Energy, which used to be the Atomic Energy Commission way back when, but this is where a lot of these new technologies are being developed. And one of the things that they have come up with, and there's a patent that's actually held in their name, is to be able to concentrate electromagnetic energy into a compact blob, almost like a plasma blob. It could be pictured, in fact, within the patent itself, it says it could be pictured like a photon torpedo right out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
But when they shoot these, they're traveling at just under the speed of light, which
Nick,
is 180.
Nick, have you seen STS-50 footage?
I don't think so.
You haven't?
I don't think so.
You really need to see it, Nick. It shows what appears to be a plasma. Actually, it's the STS-50 shuttle mission, and the ground controller had control of a camera on the outside of the.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
All right, then you
zipped up through the sky at some tremendous speed.
You've got it, and if that wasn't a plasma burst, I don't know what the hell it was.
Well, this patent actually was from, I believe it was 1989. And it's cited in the book because it's interesting because if people remember, too, over Australia a few years ago, there were these sightings of fireballs.
Yep.
and no one really came up with a good explanation. And certainly it's plausible that this technology, that's the kind of place you try and test it out. I mean, it's a big, wide-open area. You need distance because they're traveling so fast.
That's right. Nick, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour already, and we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell, and we're talking about Tesla-type technology. For good? Question mark? I don't know.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
I'll find some crowded avenue. Though it will be empty without you. Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through. Loving you. Call up some girl I used to know. After I heard her say hello, I couldn't think of anything to say. Since you're gone, it happens every day. Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through.
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Well, what we're going to ask Dr. Begich in a moment is, I agree with him. These plasma weapons, these EMP weapons, are being developed right now. Star Wars 2, call it whatever the hell you want, doesn't matter. But, I guess I would add this question. And that is, with Iran quickly developing nuclear weapons and a delivery system to get them to the east coast of the U.S., with North Korea developing all of this, with the Chinese having this, with all of these people having nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles that will deliver them to our doorstep, then shouldn't we have something to protect against that? That's what I've been struggling with, and it's not a big struggle for me. To me, we'd better have something to protect ourselves with, or one of these days, one of them is going to be on our doorstep, and that day I don't think is very far away. All right, as we referenced a few moments ago, they tried to stop a missile launched from Vandenberg out of Kwajalein. And they fired from Kwajalein. It missed. We didn't stop it. Had it a nuclear warhead on board, it would have erased Kwajalein from the world map. In other words, if that had been headed for New York City and we'd have tried to stop it, we would not have, and there would be no New York City right now. So a really good question, Doctor, is shouldn't we be developing a defense against a ballistic missile delivery with all the new and wannabe nuclear powers around getting delivery systems?
I have absolutely no disagreement with that. In fact, I would like to see the United States, have the state-of-the-art systems and a system that's going to work. What we know from our research is likely what will eventually be developed is not what they're currently testing in terms of a ground-to-air missile intercept. I mean, it's the logic of it. It just is not going to work. I mean, in terms of close-in submarines, for instance, and those types of delivery systems, there's lots of ways to get them in. If they're in close, that's not going to stop them.
Yeah.
The fact is, in order to intercept an intercontinental ballistics missile, you have to travel at such a tremendous speed that to get the speeds that you need, it's virtually impossible to get a decent kill ratio.
I always thought the the kinetic energy weapons had a pretty good shot. If you get up there near it, ahead of it, and fire a million BBs, all it takes is a few to hit it going that fast, and it pulverizes it. Now, they played with that idea for a while, I know. Not workable?
I don't think so. And where I think the technology is going, and from what we've seen, the real emphasis is on electromagnetic systems because they're speed of light. They're fast as
sure.
you can get. You get
sure.
plenty of rounds off before you have to say you missed. And it's a matter of, how much energy does it take, which has been a big part of the discussion with a lot of these technologies. And one of the things that showed up, and it was in a Los Angeles Times article in March of 96, and it was it talked about how you can compact energy, in other words, how it's released. And I'll just quote, it's very short. It says, it could take the energy contained in two car batteries, compress it, and release it in 150 billionths of a second, thus exceeding in those 150 nanoseconds the electrical generating capacity of the United States by about 20 times. And so doing, Aurora, which was the project name, simulated the high-energy gamma rays that could scramble the electronic controls of everything from toaster ovens to guided missiles. That's where they're headed with this technology. I mean, when you think about...
Do you have any idea over what sort of geographic area? In other words, how small would be the area affected by this EMP pulse, or how big would it be?
Well, if you look at the a U.S. patent, the one I was referencing earlier by the Department of Energy, it's
right.
patent number 4959559, and it says this invention relates generally to the transmission of pulses of energy, and more particularly the propagation of localized pulses of electromagnetic or acoustic energy over long distances without divergence.
Right.
And what it describes is something that can travel hundreds, if not perhaps thousands of miles, and not diverge sufficiently as to lose significant energy and be traveling at near the speed of light. And this is, this is a phenomenal divergence from the conventional knowledge in terms of how energy reacts. But
would it be as broad as a house?
Yeah, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a big blob of energy that's probably even going to expand a little bit more than that, maybe even doubling, a typical four-bedroom house in size. But you're going to be able to get several rounds off in projecting the trajectory of those incoming objects if you have sufficient transmitters to do it.
And I would think with computer tracking and GPS and all the rest of it, they could fire it quite accurately.
Absolutely.
Even at something going that speed.
Absolutely. And they're going to be able, keep in mind that it's traveling at 186,000 miles per second,
right.
these pulses of energy.
Right.
This is, it's far outstripping the speed of anything that's going to come in carrying any payload of any kind. So, in the sense of a real system, that's probably the direction we'll eventually go. The complication in all of this is we have a treaty, the ABM treaty.
Is it environmentally friendly, by the way?
Well, this is hard to say. I mean, I don't think, first of all, no one has seen any environmental assessments on any of this technology because it's all classified in such ways you're not going to see it. That's problematic because we really don't know, what happens when you miss. Obviously, what happens if something gets in the way. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to be considered in looking at these systems. When you look at HAARP, for instance, and its potential impact on weather systems,
yes,
and human physiology both. You know, these are the things that we think need some open discussion before we start to deploy the systems, assuming we're solving one problem and maybe creating even more immediate and serious problems.
And so Nick, our weather is already turning really bad on us. Now, could it be that HAARP is an attempt at remediation? Have you considered that? I mean, all possibilities remain open.
Well, I mean, that's a possibility, but if that's happening, it certainly isn't working very well, number one.
Well, I was about to suggest that. They're doing a crappy job, if that's what they're doing.
But let's look at a couple of things that are, again, referenced in our newest work. One was a quote. Do you remember when the bad tornadoes hit Oklahoma? I think it was last summer or the summer before.
It wasn't just a bad tornado, Nick. They had, near Oklahoma City, an F6 tornado.
Right.
A climatologist, a meteorologist, said an F6 is impossible. Our atmosphere cannot sustain it, and yet it reached those winds.
Well, here's what Clinton said, according to an article that we quote from. Mr. Clinton said he would support money for a national weather center at the University of Oklahoma, where he hoped research could be done into how to deflate the strength of some of these very powerful tornadoes before they hit. You know, and everyone kind of laughed about it, except what had also happened at the University of Oklahoma is Dr. Bernard Eastland had completed work under contract to the European Space Agency for doing exactly that. Utilizing their computers and modeling systems, he was able to demonstrate the effectiveness of a HAARP-type system for mitigating tornadoes by being able to counteract their energy. You know, this report was presented in October of 98 at a major space symposium in Sardinia, Italy.
Okay, well, I'm just a neophyte, but work with me for a second on this. It seems to me that a tornado or a hurricane or a storm like the one that slammed into France or the 115 miles an hour that slammed into the northwest coast, all of these things are Mother Nature's way of equalizing some imbalance, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Hot and cold come together. You get this energy differential. It must dissipate. And so what would happen if we could stop the tornado or stop the hurricane?
Well, the energy has to go somewhere.
That's what I'm pointing out, yeah.
And here's the other complication. When you think about radio frequency energy. From the time that radio was invented, as far as natural background radio frequency,
right.
We've added 200 million times that amount of energy to our natural environment. That's just radio frequency. You know, forget everything else, all the other forms of energy that we've added in.
You're responsible for a great deal of it right now.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. But the fact of the matter is, when you consider all of that, and then you take the solar cycle that we're in right now, which,
yes.
You know, we're coming up into the peak here, we're in the peak here, we're not yet at the top of the scale, and we already see what it's doing. What we know is that these systems all interact, and when you look at the natural systems and what they're doing in conjunction with the man-made systems, that's where we're seeing the extremes. In fact, I sat through a climate change conference in Europe a couple of years ago that was parliamentarians from 40 countries, and there was a big debate between the Russian delegation and the Western Europeans about whether it was man-made or natural. And the consensus of this group pretty much was it's both. And I think that's where we're at. We're at a time when the energy is already demonstrating natural releases in terms of weather systems, earthquakes, I mean, all the different things that measure the energy being released from the planet, and we're adding in tremendous amounts and getting ready to add in even more, and this is coherent energy, and what they're discovering about this coherent or this rhythmic energy is that when it's like tuning a radio. When you tune into the planet's rhythm in certain situations, all kinds of havoc can break loose. In fact, Secretary of Defense Cohen was quoted in a conference in Atlanta, and what he said was, others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter climate, set off earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves.
Right.
Now, that's from April 97, and he was commenting on weapons of mass destruction and terrorist organizations possessing this kind of technology. And what we have said and what we've very carefully documented is the fact that this technology exists today, and that you can stimulate it, not with so much the amount of energy, although that is relevant, It's the frequency, it's the resonance effect that you can create by any number of sources. And like with HARP, it's the pulsing of the energy that pumps the ionosphere up, that delivers high concentrations, tremendous concentrations of energy that cause this triggering effect and this release then of natural energy. It's even more powerful. And these are the things that they're playing with on just this one facility. There's a set of facilities called Super Darn, which are now being constructed across Canada. Two are being constructed in Alaska. There's a number of new systems coming online, and it's to stretch what the military is calling the revolution of military affairs, which is really about electromagnetic warfare. And to a great extent, that's what we document in Earth Rising, our newest book.
Electromagnetic warfare.
Which includes everything from information and surveillance technologies to new energy weapons to systems that affect human physiology.
I like your chapter. There's a chapter in here called The Mind Has No Firewall. Now, in computer land, a firewall is something you put up so hackers can't get in.
Right.
The mind has no firewall. The implication of that is that we have no protection against mind control by electromagnetic energy.
That's essentially what that says. And actually, the header, or the name of that chapter, was borrowed from an article that appeared in the U.S. Army War College's publication called Perimeters. And in that article was a discussion about the technologies in terms of controlling information systems. And what that article really talked about was the ultimate information system, which is the human being, and how to manipulate through many of the standard things we all know about, propaganda, manipulation of media. But then it gets in to the things that it cites coming out of Russia and coming out of our own research institutions, indicating that we're also possessed the ability to control mental functions. And when we put that chapter together...
In what sense? Do you know anything about it, Nick? In other words, what could they actually conceivably do? How could they affect our minds with HARP or anything else?
In this particular chapter, we cite right around 20 different patents on very specific technologies, but sort of to give some examples of what's
right.
possible. The idea, first of all, of affecting the emotional state of individuals. Let's kind of start there. This, what has been found is that work done by Jose Delgado going back into Yale University in the 60s and 70s and all the way up into the mid-80s, what he found is that he could change the emotional state of animals and primates and humans, almost like turning on and off a light switch, from highly ecstatic to depressed and lethargic, I mean, just on and off. He did this using radio frequency energy at 1/50th the energy concentration that the Earth naturally produces, at 1/50th the Earth's natural energy density. And he did it by hitting those window frequencies that cause chemical reactions in the brain that then triggered those manifestations and behavior changes. It's almost like using an electronic psychoactive drug. In fact, that we cite a number of citations about that use of the technology for creating those kinds of effects deliberately. When you go a little bit further, you look at the work of Alan Frey, who was doing work in the early 60s, and what he discovered was that microwave, pulsed microwave, can create an acoustic signal, a sound signal within the brain. And that would be perceived as if it were a clicking or a buzzing sound. And what happened after that was a series of inventors, and we cite each of those patents, eventually evolved the technology to the point where on a microwave carrier you could actually modulate I'll just say it and then I'll give it another way. You can modulate the signal so that when it hits the person that's in the target, it transfers through the nervous system, the brain picks out that modulated code and interprets it as sound, so they actually hear a voice in the head.
Oh, my God.
And these patents, you know, show up in a number of places, but what we've done is we've listed them all, so people can go look at them themselves. But this technology exists today. Going a little further, another patent, and this also shows up in a Air and Space for the 21st Century, which is produced by the Air Force, was it the War College or the, I'm asking my colleague here. In any case, it was an Air Force document. It's cited in our work. But basically what it suggested that eventually the technology would exist so that you could literally go in and map a person's memory set, remove it, and put in a synthesized memory. Now, that is about as stretched out as it gets when you think about invasions of privacy and the technology that is either at hand, according to the patents that already exist, according to the military, it's coming in the next couple of years.
You're suggesting that the technology to cause mass depression or elation or something in between, or we have that now?
Yes. In fact, there was a test, and I'm going to try and find it as we're talking, in Eastern Europe, which was designed to do exactly that. And it was by modulating, interestingly enough, it was by modulating the ionosphere, which is exactly the stuff of HARP. And
all right, so the people out there understand the term modulation. For example, if you if your radio station stopped transmitting audio, if I just stop saying anything like this right now, silence. If you were to tune across the carrier, tune across the radio station, you would hear a carrier. There would be a carrier there. You would actually hear it on your radio. You just wouldn't hear any modulation, as in my voice right now. My voice, Dr. Begich's voice, is modulation. It's information. And he's talking about modulating a signal in a certain way to affect human beings, to affect their state of mind. That's an incredible thing to be suggesting, Dr.
Well, here's a quote that comes out of an Air Force document. The article is called Non-Lethal Weapons for Military Operations Other Than War. And the quotation is just unbelievable. It's another RF weapon that was ready for use back in 1978 was developed under the guise of Operation Peak, developed by the CIA. The plan was to bounce the high-powered radio signals off the ionosphere to affect the mental functions of people in selected areas, including Eastern European nuclear installations, unquote.
Oh, my God. All right, stay right there. So I wonder, did they actually do it? I wonder if they did it to the people of Chernobyl. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Thank you.
Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Morning, everybody. Dr. Nick Begich is here. He's the one who brought HAARP to the attention of the world, the HAARP Project in Alaska. This great big ionospheric heater that they're playing around with up there. By the way, I've invited people from HAARP on any number of occasions to come forward and have a debate with Dr. Begich if they think he's all wet. They always decline. They don't want to come on the air. And I'll issue that invitation once again right now. If any of the people involved in HAARP want to come on the air and say what a bunch of crap this is and have a debate, you know, I'll make the airtime available. I've been saying this now for years, and they don't come forward. They should know I would give them a fair shake. I don't do ambush journalism. I really don't. I'd let them have their fair. See, that's what they've always said in the past, that they didn't think it would be a fair thing, that it would be sort of an ambush. Well, I don't do that. You'd get an opportunity to present your side of the story, because the object here is to get to the truth. Not serve up some agenda to all of you out there, but to actually get to the truth about what's going on. So, I renew that invitation to any of the HAARP people who'd like to come on the air and explain what it's really doing, and that it is not doing the things that we're talking about tonight. Back now to Alaska and Dr. Nick Begich, the man who broke the news about HAARP to the world. And it's what do you think, Doctor? You think they had that thing pointed towards Chernobyl?
It's hard to say. You know, it's interesting is you're not the only one that they wouldn't show up to have a debate. You know, we were invited in 98 to the European Parliament to debate HAARP, and NATO was invited, as was representatives from the American mission, to comment on ionospheric modification as for weapons applications, and specifically HAARP, and also non-lethal weapons generally. And what happened at that hearing is NATO refused, after the Secretary General was asked by the Chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Tom Spencer, to attend. They flat refused. They said they had no policy on either ionospheric modification or on non-lethal weapons. And interestingly enough, we opened the hearing by presenting a NATO document from NATO France on ionospheric modification for weapons applications, and we brought a document from the Strategic Studies Institute on the deployments of non-lethal weapons by NATO forces in a number of conflicts. And we suggested to the committee that if they really didn't have a policy on these things, what were they doing deploying them? And it just demonstrated the recklessness.
Here's one way to think about it. Would they, I ask myself, use this on us? Would they test it on us, as in people here in the U.S.? 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I would have said, no way, we don't do that kind of stuff. But, of course, we know we do. We have tested biological agents. We have tested nuclear agents on pregnant women and children and all this kind of stuff. We know we did all that, so would we test something like this on people here in this country? You bet
absolutely.
We would. Sure we would. And are we doing it? Probably.
You know, there's a whole section of our new book that deals with lies and experimentation. It chronologically goes through a number of these things. The Secretary of Energy at one point suggested that up to 500,000 Americans had been experimented on without their consent over a course of about 40 years. Even under MK Ultra, and we have a number of FOIA documents from those earlier investigations of the U.S. Senate dealing with that whole area, and they do touch on electromagnetic systems within the context of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was one of the big issues that we made a point of in the European Parliament, that these new technologies really are the direction which militaries are headed. And as a consequence, we demonstrated one of these tools to show how audio signals, for instance, can be transferred. And when we did that, a section of the resolution that eventually came out of the European Parliament actually called for a ban on any form of a weapon system that would be used for the manipulation of human beings. So I think that was an incredibly important point. And you know, the interesting story about how we even got to the European Parliament was from the first radio program we did with you.
Right.
And someone had heard us and sent a copy of our book to Tom Spencer, who read it and had some of his people that have science background review it. And that's what triggered the Europeans' interest. But this whole classification of weapons falls under what they're calling weapons of political control. And this deals with surveillance technologies, technologies in the non-lethal classifications that affect human beings and human behavior. It covers a whole array of weapon systems, and they've produced a number of documents we quote liberally from them because the Europeans are a little bit ahead of the curve.
Give me an idea of a practical application. Weapons of political control. Now, how would that translate to a practical application?
Well, for instance, if you have the ability... And just to lay out a list of things, one of the things that is disclosed in that paper was the Echelon project, which I'm sure you're somewhat familiar with.
Yes.
And Echelon, for those that don't know, is a really a surveillance agreement between five countries that allows everyone to sort of spy on each other and theoretically get around their privacy laws within their own countries and provide intelligence to various organizations from just average people's electronic communication, whether phone, internet, it doesn't really matter. But
in other words, the Russians, even though our own CIA, for example, cannot spy on us, the Russians have no such restriction, or do the Chinese, nor even the Japanese, or the Israelis, or anybody else?
Well, and to bring it at home, the agreement is between Canada, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States.
Well, so there you are, our friends, right?
Right. And
so they can do what our CIA can't, and they can share that information with us.
Absolutely. And what it has allowed and what is currently happening is virtually you can guarantee 100% communications are being monitored with the state of the technologies and the computing power that's available to these various organizations.
I had a CIA chief on the other day, Dr. Begich. Did you hear any of that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, too bad. He was the equivalent in the CIA of a two-star general. And I asked him flat out, if we, any agency, CIA, NSA, have the ability to monitor any and all conversations. And he said, well, you've got to imagine they do.
Yeah. And essentially, there's no person on the planet, if there's a will by someone in the intelligence community, you're totally transparent.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of privacy, and we dedicate almost 80 pages to just that issue of privacy, because the manner in which it's being eroded is unbelievable. I mean, it's the big push for backdoors to encryption information is because the computing power isn't quite strong enough yet to break those encryption codes at a fast enough pace. But, I mean, there's things going on now, for instance, roving wiretaps, where they target a neighborhood and they say, we know certain criminal activities happening in this neighborhood, therefore we're looking for key phrases and we're going to just monitor the whole neighborhood's conversations until we can key into the people that are probably committing those crimes. You know, it's just a gross invasion of personal privacy, and it goes a lot further than that. I mean, when you look at what's happening, for instance, in DNA printing within prison communities, that's the first step. But there's a lot of discussion, and we've seen it in some parts of the world, where whole communities, DNA is registered in some database. And from my perspective, the problems with that, at the same time that's going on, there's a lot of research being conducted to suggest that certain behaviors are genetically motivated.
In other words,
so now they have the DNA prints of everyone. Anyone who might, and I want to emphasize that, have the genetic makeup that is parallel to someone that committed your latest axe murder, they'll draw some correlation from that. There's suggestions, and there was almost a $400 million initiative during the Bush administration on a wide scale to start monitoring behavior to try and locate what they were calling genetic markers for criminal behavior. This whole line of approach and the amount of transparency that individuals are giving up, really unknowingly, I mean, we don't really realize how these things interconnect. We think, oh, if they want DNA and they're trying to you know, catch a criminal, you know, I don't have anything to hide, but that's really the wrong answer. I mean, that's the first thing that everyone says, how much freedom do we exchange for security? And this is the crux of the issue that we're trying to raise in this work. And, you know, we have over 600 source documents cited. It is the most comprehensive material we've ever compiled to lay the evidence in front of the public, to engage the debate about what these technologies mean and how we should start to at least evaluate them on their merit and determine which ones are useful and which ones really violate the very essence of morality for most people's standards.
Well, actually violate everything that we thought America stood for.
And that's exactly right. I mean, we're talking about the foundations of personal liberties. I mean, when we were talking in the last segment about mind control technologies,
yes.
You know, when you think about that, I mean, how much more invasive can an organization get? I mean, if someone can come in and literally manipulate the mental processes of human beings, what does that do to the rules of evidence in courtrooms? What does that do to the reasonable doubt burdens of juries when this technology has become generally known that you can actually manipulate all of that? It is time for the debate to begin, and the revolution of military affairs that our military establishment wants to engage needs to be met with a revolution of people who are thinking again and engaging the political process, because what we learned from HAARP is that a few people with a lot of energy can create a tremendous effect. And these issues are the issues that we're going to face in the next decade.
How do we cause this to be a matter to be debated? In other words, almost all of this is now a black project, which states as its goal something rather benign. They never talk about this, of course. So how can you get it sufficiently into the public light to cause the beginning of a public debate?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One is there is a certain amount in the public literature, and that's what we've drawn on. Academic studies that maybe are a little obscure and hard to find, but they're out there. Military documents, government records, media reports, and when you take that body of evidence and you look at it, it tells you clearly what's here now, and that demands then policy on how we deal with what's here now. And that's what we present. And I think when we look at how we dealt with the HAARP issue, it was essentially the same way. In this case, the amount of evidence is so overwhelming. There's just no way that they can argue the reality of what's out there.
Well, I know, but for all we have done, and we have screeched and screamed and yelled and written letters, HAARP is still there. HAARP is still continuing to ratchet up toward what you described would occur ultimately with 100 billion watts. It's still headed that way.
Yeah, it is. And fortunately, you know, I can say this, is that the project has been delayed. It is slower than they anticipated. You know, they expected by now to have the full array up and running when they originally conceived this program. So in that sense, it has been slowed, but, you know, it's...
Well, did we do that, or did shrinking dollars do that?
I think they got plenty of money, believe me. I mean, when we look at the continual funding on the program, it wasn't a case of running out of money. It was a case of public pressure, and when we look at what's come out since and how careful they have been and how directive they have been, and really how quiet they've been on being willing to open up and have an open discussion about this science. And the reason being is, when the evidence presented, they can't stand the light of day. And it's a matter of continuing to pursue it. At this point, what we had hoped would happen has happened on that project. We expected to get European efforts starting to move this direction, and that happened in 99 when that resolution finally passed. And when we look at what's still happening, I mean, within the United States in terms of this issue and how it connects, this work carries the debate further. I think it's going to push it onto the plate of politicians. These are the kinds of issues that people can get around and deal with in the broadest context, not just focusing on HAARP, but focusing on this entire initiative.
Boy, that's a broad area right now, and how you get a debate going on that, I don't know. I have a friend who is very high up in non-lethal weapons technology. And when he's on, he talks about the lighter side of it, you know, how you can disable a soldier that you would otherwise have to kill, that this will be used efficiently and properly by law enforcement and by the U.S. military and so forth and so on, that it is a kinder, gentler technology.
You know, that's what they say, but if you look at just what the Europeans call pepper gas, which is the gas used in most riot situations.
Yes.
In the United States, in 1 year, 113 people died from asphyxiation because they had lung disorders and were exposed to that agent. The tendency, and if you look at Northern Ireland as another example, where rubber bullets were used conflicts.
That's right.
And there were many deaths resulting from that. Yet, if you look at Bosnia, where for 1 year peacekeeping forces with live ammunition never shot anyone, the fact is non-lethals are not non-lethal in all instances. Even things like sticky foam, put sticky foam on your face, and believe me, it's lethal. The fact is all non-lethal weapons have the possibility of lethality, and the reality is that's exactly what happened.
All right. Hold it right there. Dr. Nick Begich is my guest. We're talking about non-lethal weapons and technology that's being developed right now that may be affecting you. Would you know it if it were affecting you?
No,
you wouldn't. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000. Originally aired January 18th, 2000.
This night, Dr. Nick Begich is here, and the book is Earth Rising, the Revolution Toward a Thousand Years of Peace. And that's a little misleading in some ways when you consider some of the chapters in the book. For example, the tip of the iceberg, the mind has no firewall, Earth War, Star Trek and Star Wars, disturbing advances, the revolution begins, whatever happened to Star Wars, heart, what are the risks, fly-by-wire, liquid mirrors, wireless technology, or wireless energy, totally open project, super darn, whatever that is, the AVM unraveling, Russia and China scream, power for lasers, particle beams, the big lasers, high-power microwave, blinding lasers, electromagnetic pulse guns, and it just goes on and on, from cloning pigs and humans to EMF effects, the title of the book sounds so hopeful, A Thousand Years of Peace, but the chapters look like A Thousand Years of Misery. I mean,
I only read you about a tenth of what's in here. Scientific research into the biological and health effects of electromagnetic fields, gene crime, the DNA switch, the pulse of life, the weapons revolution, cloning from pigs to humans, non-lethal and non-destructive, question mark, what to do with the peace dividend, the future of war, hiding behind the curtain, special operations forces in 2025, voice recognition, fingerprints, face prints, eye scans. It goes on and on and on. It's all in this book. And, you know, when you read the title of the book, Dr. Earth Rising, The Revolution Toward a Thousand Years of Peace, it looks like it belongs on the New Age bookshelf, you know. Aquarius is here and all that. But, man, the book itself.
The title is really where we think it can go. I mean, in terms of when you're trying to wake people up, sometimes it's a rude awakening, and I guess this is. But, you know, it is time to wake up to these issues, and we've taken, you know, time. I mean, when we started, we had 80 boxes of archived material that we reduced to 12 in order to pick out 650 sources that we felt would really demonstrate these issues in a clear way. And by doing that, it gives people what they basically need to know to carry a decent debate. Any of these issues can be researched further by just looking at those footnotes and pulling them from the library. But where it takes it is the important thing. And the last portion of this book is really oriented towards solutions. And the one thing I regret when we started the Heart Project is that I didn't have as optimistic of a view as I probably should have had. In fact, I didn't believe we would get as far with that issue as we did, but I felt like we needed to at least make the effort. And, you know, at this point, you know, I feel like just how much was accomplished in that short span of time, and what did we expect? First, we expected to make people aware of the issue, and we certainly did that.
Yes.
Secondly, we wanted to get third-party review of our material and independent confirmation, and we got that from a group in Belgium called GRIP, which specializes in weapons technologies and a number of others. The third thing and the last thing was that we got political action that would eventually result in proper analysis and review. And what has happened, and eventually a treaty. And what has happened in that regard is in the last month of last year, just a month ago, the European Parliament issued a request for proposals for a major comprehensive study on electromagnetic field effects, dealing with everything from microwave ovens and cell phones all the way to weapons technologies. And that report is going to be developed over the next year. At the same time, the Greens, the Social Democrats, and conservative members of the European Parliament have begun to look at these issues and are beginning to cooperate on these issues in terms of pushing forward a treaty agenda. And that kind of coalition in Europe would be like the Republicans and Democrats agreeing to do something in the United States. So it has very good potential, and I think that with effort on the part of individuals, because that's what happened with this story, is a lot of people took it upon themselves to talk to their congressional delegations, talk to the people that were around them, and that made the issue. I mean, that made this an issue and allowed it to go as far as it went. In this work, which we consider the most comprehensive a compilation of materials we've ever assembled, we think it gives people even a better tool to work with.
But, boy, you're talking about, I mean, most of what you've got in here, to call it a brave new world would not be to do it justice at all. I mean, if even half of all this came to pass, we would be living in a world that you and I can't even imagine, one that wouldn't resemble. Maybe we're already there, for all I know, to a large degree. We're already there. I don't know. But the world would be so different, Doctor. Who would want to live in a world like this?
And that's the point. And I think that's the point that needs to be made as these technologies are advancing. And what's happening in technology generally, which a lot of people know but never really think much about, but from the invention of the wheel to where we are today in technology, that amount of knowledge is going to double in the next 9 to 10 months. And that rate of change makes it almost impossible for people just to keep up. And what we've tried to do is take an area of that we think has been neglected in terms of media, take that information and condense it in a way that can be useful. And I think there's more of that. I mean, you see it in a number of other areas where people are consolidating material so it's useful. And I think that's the challenge of the information age, is to get information out to engage the information democracy, because quite frankly, these are the kinds of issues that we need to be brought down into plain language so we can have the discussion as individuals and push it onto the plates of politicians.
Well, which one wins, though? Which one wins? In other words, with these technologies, a few people could control billions of people one way or the other through the acquisition of information or through some sort of direct control, which is discussed in your book. So it's going to be a race. A race between trying to get this into the public domain to be debated and those who would be the controllers.
Exactly right. In fact, we do, in one of the closing chapters, we analyze Zbigniew Brzezinski's writings from the early 70s, and we also analyzed Huxley's ideas in the last essay he wrote, of a major essay he wrote, which was 4 years before his death, called Brave New World Revisited, which was looking at the technologies on a factual basis rather than the fiction novel. And what he said was, from the time he wrote the fiction novel in the 30s to what had happened by 1958, it was 40 years ahead of what he predicted. And what we saw in Brzezinski's writings in the early 70s were suggestions about these very technologies that we've been discussing, the idea of controlling the environment and controlling the emotions of human beings, was discussed in one of Brzezinski's books called Between Two Ages, and it was written, I think it was 73 or 71, but in any case, what he suggested in that work was that if you could ever figure out how to electronically stroke the ionosphere in just the right way, you could return a signal to the Earth that would change the behavior of human beings over a large geographic area. Again, that's the stuff of HARP, that's the stuff of a lot of technology, and the fact is, The science has caught up. We're now there where this discussion has no choice but to take place. In Europe, it's starting. In the U.S., it needs to begin.
Yeah, let's try this one on for size. On the dark side of things, if you had such a technology, and let's say that you could emit a signal that would come back to Earth and strike a wide geographic area and cause people who were normally not violent to be irritable first, and then finally, if kept up, to be driven to violence or anarchy, if you will.
That technology exists.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying, if you were one of these conspiracy-minded folks who said to themselves, I believe there's a cabal out there that would like to control things, that wants a lot more control, that wants to change the nature of our country and others so that there is a universal control, then you would produce a crisis in order to implement the kind of control or bring on the kind of control that you desired.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that idea shows up in a couple places. One is a Council of Foreign Relations document with using new technologies for affecting covertly countries to the point of destabilizing them, as an example.
Yeah.
And the other is Zbigniew Brzezinski, who later became National Security Advisor to Carter. And what he was essentially saying in his text, Between Two Ages, and he said it plainly, he said it didn't matter who was in control, liberal or conservative. When these technologies were available, the temptation to use them to further political ends would be greater than their good sense to restrain.
Yep.
And that's the concern of the European Parliament. When they talk about weapons of political control, that is what they're talking about. They're talking about the comprehensive use of these various technologies for manipulating outcomes in a way that eliminates debate, that contains debate. And there's one military document that we cite that actually says that by using these kinds of weapon systems, there's no good footage for CNN. And essentially, there's nothing to report because there's not the carnage that you get in standard warfare. One of the other things that comes up in the military document that is extremely alarming to us is the idea that more and more warfare is controlled at the end of a computer terminal. In other words, the person never engages in the direct combat. As these more sophisticated weapons that you don't even perceive as you're being affected by them are developed, you've got console warriors that never identify with what war is, so they try and avoid it in the future. I mean, that's the legacy of each war has been the returning veterans say, hey, we got to do whatever we can to not let this happen again, to not send our sons and daughters into that environment again.
Right.
But here we have a technology where we can insulate, and the value of peace is somehow diminished by dehumanizing it, by making it a video game. And I think that's, again, a drift of the technology that demands the ethical considerations, the moral considerations of what this is all about. Toward 1,000 years of peace, I think, is a goal that anyone and everyone on the planet shares. Getting there, it's going to be, I'm sure, all of the things that everyone predicts in terms of turmoil, because people don't give up power easily. And in this United States, the thing that will turn the tide is as the public gains knowledge of how much technology and information has been used to manipulate them, to subvert their rights, that's where you're going to see the change within our country, the same kind of changes that we saw all through Western Europe as governments were changed out in the last decade, and Eastern Europe in this decade, last decade,
yeah,
as well.
But everybody's working on this, who's anybody. And so if we're not, then we're derelict. China's, you know, they're working on it. The Russians, you know, they are. If the Iranians could be, they would be, and they might be.
They may very well be. And the fact is, electromagnetic weapon systems are probably one of the only kinds of systems that you could have a verifiable monitoring policy on, because every electromagnetic field generates a unique signal that can be detected by any one of the sophisticated countries with satellite-based technologies.
Yeah, but we can't even stop the proliferation of atomic weapons right now.
I agree with that. I don't think we're going to stop the proliferation of them. I think that it's important for us to know what these things are, to have the discussion, to develop the necessary defenses. I have no disagreement with any of that. The things that
but what are the... Just let's imagine an electromagnetic weapon that could... produce a state of anarchy, could suddenly sweep over people and they wouldn't even know it. They'd just be angry. They'd want to kill. Who knows? Mad Max scenario that would produce that kind of scenario in states or even across the United States. If that was in the hands of somebody else, they would use it. And I'm curious, Doctor, what would be a defense against that?
For individuals, I don't think there is any. I mean, if a government were to... Because the carriers you use are any number of carriers. So
yes.
You would have to be able, you know, to monitor, you know, a lot of things. It's not just a simple zero in on this carrier and zero in on this frequency.
Right.
So you've got a lot of different delivery systems. So I don't think it can be effectively guarded against by an individual. On the other hand... Again, it depends upon the policy of government and what those government policies are. I mean, think about it from the standpoint of one of our allies. Okay, we have allies. We have a history of spying on our allies and using our CIA to do it, doing a lot of things that make our allies a little insecure.
As they do with us, by the way.
Absolutely. And the fact is, when you look at competing entities, I mean... Do foreign governments want to see that technology used against their citizens? The answer to that is no. You know, when it comes to the other guy, the answer is absolutely not. But that's what's going to create the discussion for what is, and then that's going to decide on what policy guidelines those things
are. So what are we going to end up with, some sort of mutual assured Mad Max scenario?
Well, I think the technologies are going to evolve. There's no question about it. They're going to be developed, and the concerns that are being expressed by the Department of Defense of the United States is that as the understanding of the mechanisms by which these things work, there's nothing so sophisticated here. It's things that can be constructed off the shelf, and that's a big concern. I mean, the concern of, for instance, a small portable EMP weapon driving down Wall Street, knocking out computer databases, would be highly disruptive to the entire global economy.
Sure would.
That technology is possible. That technology exists. I mean... Even the control of, you know, in terms of distribution, manufacturing, when things come through customs, people even know what they're looking at in half the instances. There's a lot of reasons why we have to discuss what's out there, and there's a lot of reasons why we should evolve policy on how and when, if ever, some of these technologies are going to be deployed, and that requires some discussion. The idea that you have the ability to manipulate environments and having unforeseen consequences perhaps on other parts of the planet, making an adversary out of an ally overnight, all of those possibilities are before us. What we do with the technology...
Okay, doctor, I think most of us know that you can detonate a nuclear weapon high up in the atmosphere and take out perhaps a great part of North America's transistors. In other words, goodbye computers, goodbye everything that is solid state. Just, it's gone.
Right.
Now, are you saying that, for example, a weapon has been developed, in your view, that could do that without the detonation of a nuclear device?
Absolutely. In fact, it is cited within the documents on HAARP, and it's also cited on smaller-scale weaponry down to the size weapons that are used for disabling an automobile, for policing use, for instance. In fact, we have a Justice Department of Justice article on that very device and the patent that goes along with it. You know, all of this is from a small scale to a large scale. The principles apply. It's a matter of how big is your target, what is your delivery system, how much power do you have, can you pulse that energy in a compact way where you don't require some huge source of energy. You just need to be able to release it in a very, very short span of time. And that's essentially what's been developed. There was even at Philips' lab, which was responsible for the development of the HAARP technology, they demonstrate a pulse weapon that's just basically a huge bank of capacitors that store energy, then suddenly discharge it
in
one big burst.
Right. Yes. Oh, I can certainly imagine that. I can certainly imagine that. Well, I'm not exactly sure where this leaves us. It seems to me it leaves us reasonably defenseless. In other words, right now, as you said, how about at the government level? In other words, if an energy device like that was unleashed on us, would we have a way? I mean, we can't even stop ballistic missiles. Can we stop something coming at the speed of light? I don't see how.
This is the whole nature of all of this. I mean, it forces, at least in terms of, what are the real threats and what are the real concerns. And when you look, I mean, the coming storm, I mean, that is emerging as we speak in some part of the planet. The fact of the matter is these things are upon us. The technology is here. The discussion has to take place. What comes of it depends upon a lot of independent factors, but I can guarantee you, if no one does anything, we will see that brave new world appear in our lifetimes, and it's not going to be a pleasant place to be.
All right. Hold on right there, Doctor. We'll open up the phone lines when we get back. I'm Art Bell. Dr. Nick Begich is here. Earth Rising, the Revolution Toward 1,000 Years of Peace.
He's saying, you've got something for me.
But we never use psychological warfare.
You call love, but confess.
Certainly not against our own people, right?
You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best.
Been angry lately, have you?
These boots are made for walking. And that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Good morning. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
When you ought to be truthing. And you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for...
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 45, 45,
Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 18, 2000.
Good morning. This song really does say it, doesn't it? Thing about it is, it may not take that long. This song really reaches into the future. Way out there, to 10,000 years. Begins in 2525. Actually, a lot of what he prognosticated for that in later years is here now. And that's what we're talking about.
It's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of stars.
Good morning, everybody. Dr. Nick Begich. Well, all right, back now to Alaska and Dr. Nick Begich. Doctor, welcome back.
Thanks.
Your book, Earth Rising, The Revolution Toward a Thousand Years of Peace, is available, I take it, Amazon.com and the normal.
Actually, Amazon doesn't have it up yet.
They don't have
just,
it.
Literally have just got it out. You've got one of the very first copies you released. So.
Do I? Really? All right.
Yeah, we do have it available. I can give a toll-free if that's all right.
It's all right.
All right. It's 888-690-1277, and the book is $21.
$21, huh?
And that
is a lot. There's so much in this book, Doctor. We could do 100 shows on what's in this book.
This what we really wanted to do too is give a good overview, but still pack it pretty full. So it's pretty dense in terms of the amount of material. But I think it's real manageable in terms of how the story builds, because we try and explain each technology that you need to understand in order to get to the next one. So it's ordered in that kind of a way. And it really builds the knowledge of average people in terms of these areas.
All right. A lot of people have a lot of questions for you, so let's go explore. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Good morning.
Am I on the line?
Yes, you're on the line. You're going to have to speak up good and loud. Where are you?
In Los Angeles. Ricardo here.
Yes.
Question about the storms in Chiapas and Central America, and whether there's a way to know whether HAARP project or the American military has amplified those storms, and the possibility of the governments benefiting from that.
All right. Let's do that. Let's ask. The weather has been crazy, Doctor?
It's plausible. You know, the other thing to consider is HAARP. You know, when people think of HAARP, they always think of just Alaska, but there's other facilities that have been retrofitted over the years. One of those is Arecibo, Puerto Rico, which is a little closer to the area that this caller is concerned with. And you know, we've not followed that as closely as perhaps we could have. But it's, you know, it's plausible that other systems and other things are contributing to this. And the difficulty now is sort of sorting it out, because we know the natural cycle is on the upswing where these kinds of anomalies normally occur, but we also know on the backdrop of that are these new technologies. So in order to make those kinds of suppositions, I guess, is what they are now, but in order to make them factual, you'd really have to know what facilities were operating where, and you'd need to be able to correlate that material. And there's no independent monitoring like that going on, but that's one of the things that we've asked Europeans to consider undertaking in terms of following what's happening with this technology.
All right. Well, here's something I've been thinking about. We know, for example, recently that since the, quote, Cold War, end quote, because I don't think it's really over, but since it's over, the U.S. military has reported that our submarines have measured a change in the thickness of the ice at the Arctic over the last two decades of 40%. Now, they just got around to telling us about this recently, because before that it was a secret, you know, military secret. Now, we have 40% less ice, and it's going rapidly. That's serious, doctor.
It is. In fact, it actually goes back a lot of years. It's not just over the last two decades, because if you look here in Alaska, for instance, at the early pioneers and where they were prospecting at the turn of the century, and the glaciers that they traversed and the measurements that were taken, some of these glaciers have dropped by 1,000 feet in thickness. I mean,
yep.
There has been a warming trend since at least the 1890s in Alaska based on that, and it's accelerated in recent years. There's no question
about
that.
That's right. So let us for a second just think of a scenario. Let's say that they're well aware of what's going on, that there is a change occurring, and they're trying to do something about it. Now, I realize that that ascribes awfully good motives to whoever is using this technology, but it could be, couldn't it?
I if it is, I really think it's where man's crossed the line, because the ability to, we don't even understand enough about how to properly model the planet in terms of what interactions we might create inadvertently. And this is where the danger, wherein lies the danger with all of this technology. When you think about whether it's a human being or a plant or the planet itself, energy plays an important role in the existence of all physical matter. I
sure.
mean, energy is the essence underlying atoms and molecules and chemicals and compounds. And what these systems, this whole idea of electromagnetic warfare addresses, is manipulating the energy so as to cause effects, whether it's weather effects, whether it's generation of earthquake, as Secretary of Defense Cohen referenced in his presentation on weapons of mass destruction, or whether it's manipulating human beings or creating illness. I mean, there's so many ways to manipulate energy, but the basic understanding is that by manipulating energy, you can have profound effect on both living organisms and other systems, including weather systems and the like.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Nick Begich. Hello.
Good evening, gentlemen. For a long time, I've been wanting to call you, Art, and talk to you about Columbine. I just don't think the way it was reported made sense. There were holes in the story. For instance, the TV camera tape was accidentally being changed just at that time. Mm-hmm. To me, that leaves too much to coincidence. The other thing is, how did they get all those pipe bombs and all those large rifles, et cetera, big guns in without being seen?
To this day, we don't know.
Unless someone was working with them. Now, our country wants the guns away from Americans and our freedom to carry guns gone. Could they be using mind control, and could they be centering it on a few selected children so that this kind of thing would be taken up and cause a tremendous tragedy at school after school?
We've had all this school violence, doctor, and when you're talking about the kinds of things you're talking about, it leads to obvious speculation of this sort about what occurred at Columbine and
sure.
what's occurred elsewhere.
The speculation, I understand that, but by the same token, look at other forms of how behavior is affected. And when you look at the media generally in terms of how they amplify those events, and what are they being amplified for, and the political discussions that surround shooting incidents, really they sort of generate additional shooting incidents, number one. And number two, they become the rallying points for whatever cause against gun ownership.
That's right.
That people want to raise. But
That's
the reality
right.
is...
Every time, almost immediately. In fact, when there's a tragedy, you can expect the president to talk about gun control within, at the outside, 48 hours.
That's right. And an interesting statistic that people should think about is there are four times more people killed in the United States by medical malpractice than gunshot wounds. And you never hear the outcry about regulating that industry a little bit more carefully in terms of scrutiny over professionals that may cause those deaths being out of the profession. And, it's an interesting analogy, because whatever you want to make of a political issue, it proves the point. It can be made. And I think that point, in terms of a broader agenda, if you followed some of the CNN stories and C-SPAN has run some things, the issues of privacy and the Internet and all of that is becoming more widely discussed in the mainstream media, which is why, again, the whole idea of what all of our technology is doing is in the attention of most people. I mean, Y2K, if it taught us anything, it taught us to question our technology and think about our technology from the standpoint of how dependent we are and what it can do to us. And as an extension of that kind of thinking, we need to look at all of the things that we're doing and say, does this make sense for what we've...
Well, I could do a CNN story or an NBC story after one of these tragedies. You know, they would go inevitably to a neighbor who would say, oh, he was just a model little boy. He was a quiet little boy. We never gave it a second thought. He's been part of the neighborhood and well thought of, and so we can't imagine what could have caused him to do what he just did. And that could apply across the board. That's exactly the kind of interview you get.
That's right. And you know what's interesting is the idea, the thought that perhaps the government would do that. In the MK Ultra documents that we quote in our latest book, this, again, it talks about the fact that the ultimate test is in the field and the fact that it has to be done covertly and without the knowledge or consent of the victims. And it's discussing MK Ultra, for those that don't know, is about mind control. It was a project run by the CIA that was investigated by the United States Senate. And a tremendous amount was disclosed. Unfortunately, most of it was also shredded at the time.
You know, actually, the CIA man I had on the other last week, it was his department that initiated MK Ultra.
Oh, great.
But he didn't want to talk a lot about it, though. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Nick Begich. Hello.
Hello, Art. Another great show. Dr. Begich, I read your first book, and I'll be calling you for tomorrow on the next one. I think
right,
you should already be considered for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, thanks.
I have two questions, if I may. Number one, I have been very interested in doing research on mind control. There's tons of stuff on the Internet. And so perhaps that's the reason I'm a little more aware of it. But there has been, in my area, an explosion of microwave towers. And I know that, you know, fiber optics and cellular and pagers and all are the norm today.
That's right.
And the deregulation has caused a lot of companies. Nevertheless, I rode, I guess, down the interstate 50 miles and counted 67 towers. And they just, I just noticed them. I mean, they're just coming up like weeds. Interestingly, some of them are at post offices. I was wondering, do you make anything of that, or am I just...
Well, those are probably cell phone relays and towers. And here's an important consideration, and we cite this in a couple of places, is the ability to utilize, and again, I want to emphasize this, virtually any carrier. You can modulate a frequency on virtually any carrier that can affect human physiological processes. And this is the important consideration, is whatever these systems are, assume they're being used as cell phones. That's fine. That's great. That's wonderful in that sense. But the fact is, could they be used in another way? The answer to that is absolutely yes. Whether it's your television set, and there's a couple of patents that we cite there, being able to use the cable to bring in subliminals that are beyond the control of the operator, that's possible. I mean, anything, radio signals in the Gulf War, in fact, we cite one report. And we had speculated on this, you know, with the things we had learned during the HARP story. But what came out eventually was that they put ultra-high frequency signals in the ultrasonic range on radio carriers in such a way that they brought in what they called silent sounds. And that's what created the fear and the anxiety in the Iraqi troops.
Oh, I remember they were actually, CNN was reporting they were paralyzed with fear.
Yeah, and this wasn't because of the bombing. It came out that it was, in fact, because of these new electromagnetic weapon systems, the idea of being able to carry that message in such a way as to just scare them to death. And that's why you saw those mass surrenderings. I mean, in those senses, you know, great. It avoided death. It did a lot of things. I have no problem with that. What I'm concerned about is a major initiative between DOD and Department of Justice. And we cite probably around 100 documents out of DOJ that show the transfer of many of these technologies for policing organizations. And this changes the picture in terms of Americans and where we should be on that issue. I mean, do we want these technologies used? in our streets, in our cities against American citizens? And if so, under what conditions do we want to see that happen? And this is an extremely important issue when you look at, all right, if you use them against an enemy, that's one thing. But if you're using it against your own citizenry or you have the ability to do so,
yeah.
Should that be regulated? I believe it should. And should Americans call for that regulation? I believe they should. In terms of surveillance technologies, should our government be able to skirt the law under the Echelon program? No, and I don't believe most Americans would agree that they should. Where is the line drawn in terms of protections, in terms of terrorists and real threats, and the imagined threats of our government?
It's all blurred. That's the problem now. It's all blurred. What was once clear is now not clear. In other words, as you mentioned, with Echelon, they can virtually spy on their own citizens, get all the information they want legally by skirting the law.
And it's the upside-down equation. On the one hand, the average person becomes more and more transparent, while on the other hand, governments become less and less transparent.
Yeah.
That's fundamentally wrong within democracies. A certain amount of information is necessary for public debate, and yes, it means that certain things get disclosed. We don't have to tell people how to build these things, but we ought to have a discussion about their merit and their use, and that's legitimate, and we've allowed the secrecy syndrome since World War II to advance to the point where it's just totally out of control. I mean, when you look at the budgets, in 1997, the Air Force equipment budget, according to the Washington Post, 40% of that was for black projects.
Mm-hmm.
Projects so secret even the Congress doesn't know what they're putting the money out for.
That's right.
And in a democracy, that's problematic. The idea, and this is where the change, I believe, will come. When people realize what our own government has done, when you consider the Department of Energy Secretary O'Leary suggesting that 500,000, a half a million Americans were experimented on without their consent, when the whole story is told, and those are just indicators of what's out there, Americans are going to be mad, and we're going to get the change that I think Americans are looking for. And that's ultimately, when people say, what can protect us from this? That is what can protect us from this, is our own initiative to engage the political process and insist that our elected people, as they roll around this election year, that they get the message on these issues and
all right.
Deliver the information.
Meanwhile, they're mostly debating taxes and, you know, all the things that Americans are used to hearing in presidential debates. Actually, the night has a lot more than 1,000 eyes. It may have millions of eyes, and some of them may be on you.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. You say that you're at home when you phone me, and how much you really care. Though you keep telling me that you're lonely, I'll know if someone is there. 'Cause the night
has a thousand eyes. I don't want your lonely mansion with a tear in every room. All I want to love you, promise, beneath the haloed moon. But you think I should be happy with your money and your name, and hide myself in sorrow while you play your cheating game. Silver threads and golden needles.
listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 18th, 2000.
Good morning, everybody. Dr. Nick Begich is here, and we're on the line. So if you have a question, that's what we're here for. We're talking about a very, very brave new world. Or is it really, is it more like a cowardly world when you think about it? Intrusion at every level you can imagine, even in your own mind, without permission. That's not a brave new world, is it? It's actually kind of a cowardly new world. But maybe that's the way it's going to go. I'm Art Bell, and this is the place where we talk about stuff like this. Once again, from Alaska, Dr. Nick Begich. Welcome back, Nick.
It's good to be back.
All right, again, folks, the book is Earth Rising, The Revolution Toward a Thousand Years of Peace, but it's kind of a deceptive title. It's a great hope, but slightly deceptive in terms of what's actually in the book. What's in the book is every nightmare you've ever had, and a few you no doubt have not yet had. To get the book, you call 1-888-690-1277. And you do that, what, during the day, doctor?
Any time, 24 hours, it's up and running. And,
all right.
You can also go to our website, which is linked to yours tonight.
Right, of course. We always do that. But the phone number for the book is the important one, 1-888-690-1277. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Nick Begich. Hello.
Hey, Art, how's it going?
All right.
Hey, this is Patrick from the Word Eyes to See, the band Word Eyes to See.
Yes,
MP3. Yes. Hey, yeah, we've been talking, the band has, a lot about the situation that's going on. We've been noticing on TV a lot of commercials for different types of drugs, for everything from depression to, do you feel uncomfortable amongst a crowd? And it just seems like there's a lot of things like that going on.
Right.
And also, it seems here in the last few years, particularly, a lot more violence with kids. And I don't think that a lot of these kids are doing the violence based on illicit, illegal drugs. And I started wondering, you know, what's causing this? And then I read his book, this harp, his harp book, Angels Don't Play That Harp. And my sister had given me the book. And I just kind of tied it in, and I started thinking, well, you know, if that's what's going on, some kind of mind control with this electromagnetics, maybe the government and other people are in on this and that they're trying to alter it or do something about it using mind control psychology drugs. What do you think about that, Doctor?
You know, there's a couple things. There was as I mentioned earlier in the show tonight, there was a big initiative during the Bush administration, and I didn't really go into detail about what that was about, but essentially they were going to go into inner cities and with the utilizing teachers, pick out the students that were exhibiting non-conforming behavior. And then those children they were going to test and then interview families and then medicate those kids with drugs under the premise that their disorder was somehow genetically based and could be detected by a series of tests. That got squashed, fortunately, but it's come back. I mean, since that was the early 90s, it came back again. There was $42 million spent on various studies to try and demonstrate that that's a possibility. And then, and we cite some of this research in our latest work. But the other thing that came out that was real interesting is that the development of psychoactive drugs, drugs that change behavior, are being evolved to the point where you can basically take a pill for whatever personality you want to have that day. And
we're losing our caller here. Hey, caller, are you there? Now we lost him to a burst of static.
In any case, those drugs are being developed, and the marketing trends that you see on television right now is doing a lot of things. One is it's again sort of indoctrinating the next generation with the idea that take a pill for anything, that's where the solutions are. And the other thing that it's doing is it's significantly driving up the price of prescription and patent medicines because that advertising is an expensive element to the entire equation. So it's having two effects, neither of which is necessarily good. And the idea of taking a pill to change your behavior, you know, it's sometimes it's important. I mean, the emotions we're feeling are indicators that, you know, we need to deal with things, whether they're fear, pleasure, depression, whatever. Those are important human attributes that are signals to us, you know, in terms of our interpretation of the reality around us. We don't want to be walking around in some semi-zombification state to maintain some level of happiness. That's just as abusive as an alcoholic, quite frankly.
Right you are. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Doctor, I've got a question for you about, you were talking before about using the transmitters to do a deep bass resonance kind of thing to alter behavior.
Yes.
What I want to know is basically how does a regular person, just like me, but not me, how does somebody hack into that and use it themselves?
Well, actually, there's a number, and this is sort of the other side of the sword. I mean, all of
now be careful here, Doctor. I have a feeling you're talking to somebody who is a hacker.
No. I just wish I was.
Well, in terms of the technology, I mean, for instance, for altering the brain state, there's a number of brain states that are conducive to things like artistic work or concentration in terms of learning or accelerated learning, and there are tools that will create what's called brain entrainment. And what that is where an external signal creates a mechanism by which the brain locks onto it. So it begins to mirror that external signal. This is the way many of these weapon systems work. But if you're, say, trying to get into an artistic state, an alpha state of consciousness that people enter when they're doing really artistic work, you can drive your brain waves into that frequency range to allow a higher level of proficiency at that time. And that can be done by flashing light. It can be done by what's called bioaural beat, where you have two sound waves, one entering the left ear and one entering the right ear, and say one's coming in at 16,000 cycles per second or 16,000 pulses per second, and the other is coming in at 16,007. They'll cancel and leave a standing wave of 7 cycles, which is an alpha rhythm. And
hey,
you'll entrain.
But wouldn't that be a lot like television that you're describing there?
Actually, that's a good example, because in Japan, people remember a couple years ago, there were 700 kids that had epileptic seizures.
Sure.
Watching a cartoon.
Yep. Sure.
And what happened is the brain entrained to a frequency that for certain people, it triggers that reaction, epileptic seizure, but it was the flashing of the light that triggered it. So there's a negative effect. In other words, that window frequency that triggers an epileptic seizure is certainly one you wouldn't want to utilize for enhancing learning. But, you know, each frequency is specific to a brain state. So,
yeah, but since when does the government want to enhance learning, though?
Sure. I mean, again, this is the... And this, I think, is the biggest injustice in terms of the technology when you get right down to it. Because, think about it. If you have the capability of transferring a memory set, for instance, as a concept, what about transferring a language,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Spanish or something? You know, I mean, if you want to talk about accelerated learning in a decent application, provided you're in control of what you're putting in, you know, that's a tremendous thing. Because you have to remember that these systems bypass the normal filters of good and bad. In other words, consciousness is not so much at play here.
Right.
It's a direct feed. So when you look at the technologies, yeah, there's good applications. I can tell you on some of the brain entrainment technologies are being used with brain biofeedback right now for recovering stroke victims to get them to be able to better utilize the other portions of the brain that are still functional. They're being used for kids with attention deficit disorders to slow the brain down.
Okay, but
speed the brain
on a larger scale, though. I don't mean to monopolize all the time here, but I'm really interested in this. On a larger scale, then, I mean, could you use an amplified signal to affect, say, a crowd that's being affected by another signal? Can you counteract something that somebody else is doing?
If you can monitor what's coming in, you can, and you have a sufficient energy source to counteract, you can cancel the wave. But that requires some real sophisticated equipment, because you got to be able to cover. You have to first of all know what part of the spectrum they're going to use for the carrier, and then you have to be able to...
It's really not a lot different, though, than the hacker wars that are going on right now between the government and the hackers out there trying to get into these systems, and I might add successfully getting...
Yeah, I mean, the ingenuity of average people is far beyond what we give ourselves credit for. And when people start looking at things in terms of how they work, because the basic understanding of the mechanisms yield the solutions as well, or yield other applications. And this is why the science should be opened up, because the idea of using this technology, for instance, for healing purposes instead of killing purposes would make sense to the majority of the population. The problem is it's classified. It's not accessible. So on the private side, this stuff evolves very slowly with nowhere near the billions of taxpayer money pumped into the development of the foundational, first the theoretical, and then the foundational, and then the technological innovations that were essentially denied as the American tax-paying public paying for this stuff.
Well, it is, as I said earlier, then, really a race. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Begich. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Art. This is Dan in McLean, Virginia. I had a question concerning the possibility that the chemical trails may be a way of testing the dispersion, enhancing the dispersion of the, for example, the HARP test, the frequencies, or as a way of, on the other side, maybe putting up a protective layer.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dan. We have been tracking these, and I'm sure you're aware of the controversy,
yes,
Doctor, of these contrails that are not what they used to be. It appears something is being sprayed that is not usual. And we have a million things to speculate about, but a lot of people have thought that perhaps some of this could be used to track emissions that are being made from someplace.
That's, you know, it's plausible. You know, I haven't followed that as closely as a lot of others have, and quite frankly, there's maybe even something else that should be considered, because in the context of electromagnetic weapon systems, one of the things that's well understood is that if a population, for instance, has within them a certain chemical or chemical compound, you can resonate a frequency that triggers some reaction with that chemical compound, or by the same token, inoculates everyone that's been exposed to that chemical compound versus anyone else entering that environment.
Exactly.
And so in this sense, it's certainly plausible. I mean, we know from the military's own literature that this methodology for sort of introducing your troops into the battlefield safely while you've infected everyone else and still be able to hit everyone with an invisible weapon system, but only the enemy is adversely affected, is the concept. You know, in carrying that a little further, there's another document that we located that talks about the idea of developing biological weapons based on genetics that are race-specific.
Yeah.
And in these instances, what it would require is just the touch of an individual on someone of that race, and they would be affected by whatever that disease was. So you could move through a community, for instance, a few people, and just touch a few people, and you've spread some kind of a disease that can cover a whole population. And that research was done in South Africa. It's being done in the United States, and it's being done around the world. So these are all very profound in terms of when you look at them. I mean, we think about the things we saw in mainstream media, cloning. I mean, that whole concept coming into reality from science fiction was a shock to the whole planet.
Oh, as far as I'm concerned, I would be willing to lay money that in a lab somewhere in the world, a human being has already been cloned.
To expect otherwise would be naive, given what we know about the evolution of science when it finally hits the public. We know that what's gone on behind the public view is substantial. And when you look at the whole cloning concept, I mean, one of the things that we cite is the idea now that they can multiply brain cells in the lab, and they've also figured out how to couple brain cells directly to computer chips, so they can evolve a whole new classification of computing capacity based on that concept.
Yes. You've got a chapter on computers in general, don't you?
Yeah, we touch on it throughout, because the whole idea, what's happening is the convergence of three main areas of technology: information technology, which we all pretty much understand, biotechnologies, which we are all learning an awful lot about in recent years, and then thirdly is nanotechnology, which is miniaturization that we're starting to hear a little bit more about.
Oh, yes.
But all three of these converge, and when they converge, you end up with a mixing of technologies that make a quantum leap above the sum of their total. I mean, it's an incredible leap when those technologies combine, and you look at things like the most powerful desktop computers being 1,000 times more powerful, or conversely, the miniaturization of computing power down to the size of a grain of rice from what you currently have on your desktop.
It's all on the horizon, or already breadboarded by somebody.
Exactly.
All right. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Dr. Nick Begich.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I have three possibilities that I wanted the doctor's thoughts on.
Sure. Where are you?
I'm in Connecticut.
Okay. We don't have a lot of time, so lay them out.
Okay. First, this type of technology would cost a lot of money to monitor someone, correct?
You mean an individual?
Or someone in the general population.
To track an individual person?
Yeah.
The technologies are pretty dense. I mean, the ability to monitor, like, for instance, if you have a cell phone, to track your movements by GPS is relatively easy and cheap if they want to do it. Tracking the movements of individuals depends on their motivation. It can be highly costly depending on what environment that individual's in, but it can be very cheap as well.
Okay. Then the possibilities I wanted to express had to do with the marketplace and making money. What do you think are the possibilities of one of those big media conglomerates, which there are like 9 or 10 that control all the publishing, radio, and TV, creating like a virtual reality for someone they picked out in the population to have a constant feedback system, to have a constant stream of information for ideas?
It's possible, but look at it in the broader context. I mean, isn't that essentially what they do? I mean, isn't that what major conglomerates do?
That's right.
When you think about them as they move into the developing world, they change traditional structures into consumers, you know,
mm-hmm.
basically, and completely alter the value systems, belief systems,
right.
and needs and wants of everyone in those societies and communities. And we don't see it in our own because the change isn't so quick and rapid and stark. It's like boiling the frog. If you do it slowly, they never jump out. But if you throw them in boiling water, they jump out. You know, why is Americans not regarded well in the third world? It's because of the abrupt changes that our policies bring, and not so much by Americans as individuals, but primarily by multinationals who are perceived as what Americans are. And, you know, we're seeing that already. Would it happen on a more sophisticated level?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Already in Japan, for instance, and we cite this, is that in department stores in 7 different languages, they broadcast, again, using the silent sounds, using ultrasonics, in stores to tell people not to shoplift or they'll be turned into the police.
That kind of leads me to my next possibility, advertising. With this technology, a market researcher can determine what people like to use and produce products and advertise to the subconscious and sell products accordingly.
And that's advertising. That's the whole concept in a nutshell. I mean, the sophistication, the more information you have on the consumer, and that's essentially what's being developed. I mean, every time you scan something at the grocery store to your medical records, to everything about you exists somewhere. And those databases are consolidated and drawn on for law enforcement. We cite a number of places there.
Doctor, we're at the top of the hour. Again, the book is Earth Rising, The Revolution Toward 1,000 Years of Peace, and it is chock full of this. I mean, we haven't covered, I don't think we've covered 1/100th of what's in the book.
That's probably about right. We've covered a lot of ground, but there's an awful lot there.
And so that dictates the fact that we will do another show, no doubt. If they leave me on the air.
Yeah, we can keep it up. Keep it up and keep the signal strong.
All right, doctor. We will have you on again. I can assure you, and we will do more of this because obviously there is so very much more to do. All right?
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you and good night.
Thank you and good night to everyone.
From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.